Hi, everybody. My name is Chase Nichols. We're here today on Dog Comet, or we could call it Super Farts for all I care, but we'll call it Dog Comet today for reference point's sake. We have Vinny Eastwood here with us today. Vinny is, in my opinion, one of the most gifted and prolific interviewers out there. So today I'm interviewing or having a conversation. I just want to call it a conversation with the great Vinny Eastwood from New Zealand. He has more subscribers than the New Zealand Herald, which is the main media source in your country, if I do, if I remember correctly, on YouTube. And he accomplished this all by himself, which is, I feel, is pretty impressive. I've personally been connected to and learned about a lot of different other ways of thinking, introspection, you know, conspiracy, what I'd call fact or closer to reality than what we know, through you. Some of those people being Mark Passio, I learned about through you. Andrew Bartzis, I learned about through you. I think even Sasha Stone. And that's just a handful of, you know, of the many, many people I've learned about through you. So, Vinny, why don't you tell us about yourself?
That's how I normally start my show. Because everybody loves talking about themselves, don't they? Well, I started my little YouTube channel back in 2008. I quit my job working for a telecommunications company that gave me like a 20 grand. So I was just like, well, that's good for a month. Oh, I'm going to retire. You know, first and biggest paycheck I've ever had, and that was the excuse and the motivation that I needed to quit my job, buy the iMac and the tripod and the little handy cam, and just go out, start filming protests, public meetings, and that's really what actually facilitated my awakening. Because when you talk to the people who are holding the megaphones or the microphones or speaking at protests and things like that, you find out that there's a freaking heck of a lot more to learn than just a 30-second soundbite that you see on the news. And that became apparent really, really, really quickly, like day one. I mean, I already knew the media was BS, but I just didn't know how much they weren't telling you. And I started to find out, and it's really unfortunate because there's so many people who follow me who don't listen to every single one of my shows. They don't watch every single one of my videos, so they don't know what I know. They don't know that they don't know that what I know. And that's really quite frustrating because I've gone through so many different people and different topics that to view them all will radically change the person that you are. And I had this conversation on my Facebook the other day. And I said, okay, when I post up my show, do you just read the title and the description and then move on? Or do you actually listen to the show? And so naturally, there were very, very few replies letting me know that, no, they didn't actually listen to the shows. No, that subject doesn't interest them. No, that person doesn't interest them. And so they switch off and don't learn anything ever, right? That's the whole mentality of the world right now. I only want to research what I want to research. I only want to know what I already know. I only want to do that. Blah, blah, blah. And my show is the exact antithesis to that, like the precise antithesis. Vinny, why don't you research anybody who comes on your show first? Well, what you mean, other than preventing bias from being built up in my mind against or in favor of somebody before I've even had a chance to actually talk to them and have a conversation with them like a real human being? Maybe that's a good reason enough. Why do you keep listening to everybody who has contrary views to your own? Because I don't want to become myopic, you know? I mean, jeepers creepers, man. It's almost like people are very comfortable knowing what they know already, and it frustrates the living hell out of me because I want to know as much as humanly possible. There are times when I'm overloaded and I have to take a break, etc., from this crap, because it's when you're changing yourself by learning at a geometric rate from people who are in general older, wiser, and or more experienced than yourself, it is difficult to maintain a sense of calm and cool as all of the things that you initially use to interpret your reality start to evaporate like water in the sun, right? And that's what it is. You feel dry, you feel empty, learning sometimes. And that's the sign that you've learned a bit too much this year and you need to take a little bit of time off, bro. And so I pride myself on being like, you know, the balanced, unbalanced truther.
I've been guilty a little bit of what you were just mentioning, like seeking out some of only the things I want to, that I'm interested in already, like reinforcing what I already know and experience. But that's also what I've learned in respect about you is like, all right, it's, I get uncomfortable with my own lack of expanding. And so then I seek out and purposely seek out something that I don't necessarily want to hear or agree with. And it's just, that's part of this process. It's part of the awakening. And I don't know if you remember, it was a few years ago, I connected with you and helped. I wanted to be a part of this and I helped edited a few videos for you. But I was like, you know, I was struggling at the time financially and then I couldn't, you know, I couldn't offer anymore because I had to, I had to make money, you know, like survive. And I felt like bad about that, but it was, I've reached this place now finding that balance in my life where, I've gotten to the certain point of being awakened or aware. And, but I've also, it's also freed me as far as like, I'm also, more financially stable because I was moving into my own truth. And whether you want to consider that like a practical 3D thing or like more of like a spiritual awakening support kind of a thing, that's up to whoever's listening. But that's where I'm at now. And now I have time to make my own videos, edit, you know, and take my time doing it and not have to worry about any, you know. And again, this is not to take from what you do. You rely on donations. I don't have to, but the trade-off is I can't do this full time. So well,
there's two choices. There's more than two. There's always more than two choices with everything. There's usually the two that are obvious that you can see. And then there's the 10,000 other choices that you don't see. And so when it comes to, you know, being, I don't like to use the word professional because I've been professional in the past. I've seen professionals and what they do. As far as I know, professionals have been running society for quite some time, and that hasn't been working out terribly well for anybody. Thus, it's kind of a bit more amateurish what I do because it's about fun. Right. And that's the thing. Truthers forget this. Are you having fun? Did you have a good day today? Okay. Did you go to a protest just to berate people and be a dick? You did? Okay. Was that real fun for you? Mm-hmm. No, I got splashed by a bottle of Coke by those bloody socialists. Well, that's a learning curve then, isn't it, brother? You know, it's all of life is a learning curve. And we're talking about like this three-dimensional thing. So in my 3D world, I was just thinking about this before coming on the show. It's like, what are my basic freaking 3D needs? Okay, I need a roof over my head. Got it. I need a strong internet connection. Got it. I need the technology to be able to do my work. Got it. Right, now that's just in terms of doing my work. But in terms of my life, I need clean water with no fluoride in it. I need good food that isn't manufactured with GMOs and things in it. And to live just with those basic requirements that I have, just those ones I've listed, is incredibly expensive in our modern world. I'm not eating toxic food, not drinking toxic water, and I've got probably one of the top tier pieces of technology sets in the truth movement for an operation of my size. And all of this has been given to me via donations. And I didn't just go out thinking, oh, donations will pay for everything. I started off like everybody else going, oh, I want to get advertisers. I want to get this, that, and the other. But I used to be a salesman and I can't sell stuff anymore. I got too badly traumatized by it. Don't really have an emotional investment in the outcome anymore because I'm just sick and tired of watching shows and having them interrupt the guest in order to advertise their products, or waste time that the guest is on the show by coming back from the break and then doing a live plug for the product before then going back to the guest, who you then interrupt and talk over and then interrupt with another ad break. That was making me pull my hair out, right? So we modeled American Freedom Radio after James Corbett from the Corbett Report, who talked about this thing called the peer-to-peer economy. It's not donations that I'm getting inherently. It's actually economic support from investors. They're investing in me and my operation and what I'm doing because they actually have and see an outcome to their investment. And that's why they continue to do so. Now, as a result, if I get out of bed and I don't feel like working, I don't. If I get out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning and I feel like working, I start working, right? And that's why I produce so much more than everybody else, because I devote myself full time to this craft and I don't have to make any excuses to anybody about why I'm not doing as much or whatever, because it's self-explanatory. Have a look at how much time I take off during a year, and then have a look at how much I've produced during that year and for what budget. So if I'm living on, I think about maybe 18,000 New Zealand dollars a year, that's roughly 9,000 US dollars a year, and I produce HD, I produce hours of HD video content every week that is finely tuned and edited and one of the best, most open format radio show interviews in the world, right? And it's not that hard to do, but it took me a long, long time to learn the skills that I've got to be able to do this. And that's why recently I offered, you know, people can hire me now. If you want to learn how to edit, if you want to learn how to do your website, if you want to learn how to Facebook promote and so on and so forth, if you want to do any of the things that you know that I know how to do, you can hire me and I will teach you across Skype using screen share. Screen share is amazing. We got this video called Splore for a dance party festival here in New Zealand. It's really, really cool thing to go to because it's not just like typical basically wankery festivals where you have a whole lot of really young, really hot people who are walking around and dancing and talking about their next fix. That's not what it's about. It's actually really kind of about love, and they get welcomed by a Maori elder in the beginning of it with a proper ceremony and that sort of thing. It's a very, very different festival. So we spent, myself and my mate Mikhail, who bought me the ticket last year, most of the time actually going around and helping the crew and filming the festival, and then came home and about maybe 2-3 weeks ago we started editing the video together after about a year of it being on the back burner, more or less. And he was in his place, didn't have to leave. He was in his nice, comfy, lazy boy watching me edit my thing full screen. You know, he can see my screen and it's beautiful, right? We've reduced the travel costs to zero. Mm-hmm. We've reduced the input costs to zero. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm able to produce such high quality content at virtually zero cost, because I'm cutting corners in every single way that can be done. That's why I also work so much faster than everybody else. I'll get, let's say I do a 2-hour show and there's 2 camera angles on me, 1 camera angle on the guest, plus I have to add in my green screen background and I also have to cut from my cameras to the guest camera and so on and so forth over a 2-hour broadcast. Now, I can accomplish one of those now in less than 24 hours. Which would ordinarily take someone between 3 weeks and 3 months to do. You know? And that's right. Just what happens when you just cut out the bullshit. And I think this is how the peer-to-peer economy was really supposed to be working for everybody. Because if you've got people who don't have to prove themselves anymore because it's self-evident, that they're good at what they do and all they need is the time to do it, that's how the economy is really supposed to work, I think.
So you sent a shout out on Facebook, which is why I saw it and I reached out, and you're just like, I'm ready to go. Let's start talking to people. And it just so happened you shared how you've had to stop several times, you know, sometimes for several months, because some of the things you hear and some of the stories you hear from people are so horrible, they're like so horrific, that it just like shuts down your heart, basically. It's just, it's too much to bear. And I've heard, you know, I've researched a good amount. I've heard a lot of stories myself, so I didn't need anyone to convince me, but I had an experience a few weeks ago where I spoke to somebody who was, and I'm not going to say who they were or where I was, but, and I wasn't expecting this to happen, but it just so happened this person was in a secret society, Illuminati family, and they were describing things that happened to their sibling and to themselves. And I'm empathic. I'm highly empathic. So I feel things, you know, I pick up on things from people, whether I want to or not. And about 30 minutes into this story, I realized this person was full on telling the truth. And it hurt, like it just pierced me straight to my core. And I didn't know how this person could even walk in this world functioning with the things that had happened to them. And I think it's really important to keep, you know, it's like, I'm sure you get tired of repeating what you repeat.
That's the thing. I don't repeat myself generally. And I actively try not to. Because there's whole bunches of brainwashing techniques that I became aware of, and then suddenly realized, oh my God, I'm using these brainwashing techniques on my audience unconsciously. So as soon as I became conscious of the techniques, I stopped using them. But now what's worse is that I know that I'm one of the only talk radio show hosts in the truth movement that doesn't use mind control techniques on their fucking audience.
Right. Well, one of the things I'd like you to speak about is, to anyone listening, is that, you know, these secret societies and some of the rituals that they enact and go through, that they're very real. And this happens to a lot of people, and it happens to children, you know, torturing, sexual abuse, murder. And you've spoken to so many people, that I'd like you to just, you know, go into that if you're cool with it.
Into the satanic pedophile abuse and all that good stuff. Oh, okay. All right. Well, I've come up with this thing called the Great Cycle, and what it's really kind of highlighted for me anyway is the way society actually truly works and why it works the way it does. And it's all about people's emotions and the personality disorders that they develop, right? It's narcissists, psychopaths, brainwashing, and cult indoctrination, followed by complex post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, a lot of educated people may understand one or more of these phenomena in isolation, but they don't really know how each affects the other. So think about this. A narcissist requires attention and admiration, all right? That's usually because they didn't get enough of it as a child in order for their brain to develop properly. So their neural pathways fuse shut, and their ability to self-coddle, have a self-image and things like that disappears. This happened to me, and it's an incurable condition, all right? So I need attention and I need admiration just in order to feel whole, right? That's a weakness that narcissists have built into them. And the worst ones, on the other hand, begin. Imagine it's a spectrum as well. There's really bad ones over here and not so bad ones over here. I'm kind of in the not so bad, but teetering into the I could be really bad if I let myself sort of thing, you know. I mean, they love themselves to the point of not caring about others. A psychopath, however, requires power, wealth, and sex, right? They think themselves so superior that human life has no intrinsic value except when it's of use to them. Both narcissists and psychopaths can be incredibly charming and persuasive, and they're capable of cheating, stealing, killing, sabotaging, manipulating, and lying convincingly about it without actually showing any remorse. And they frequently destroy the lives and reputations of anyone who really stands in their way, and thus often find themselves in the most powerful and influential positions of society. This allows them to control society, more or less. All psychopaths are narcissists, but not all narcissists are psychopaths. However, the subset of manipulative techniques they use to control people makes them extremely adept at extracting what they want from them and concealing their scumbaggery from them at the same time, as well as implanting beliefs in the victim's mind. This is the scariest part, is that somebody can manipulate you to the point where they can implant beliefs in your mind that you will defend even though that belief destroys you and is not true. And even though it would take seconds to find this out, you don't find out. Right. Now, interestingly, these techniques bear a striking similarity to those employed by cult leaders when indoctrinating their membership. And it turns out that cult leaders are often narcissists and psychopaths. Right. And these same psychopathic narcissistic behavioral patterns form what might be called the main pillars of brainwashing that was found to be used in government mind control experiments. All right. Now, like milieu control, I'll just give you one example. It means it's a wankery term, which means isolation of information. So you get you away from your family or away from your normal group of people that you would associate with, and they stop you from associating with anybody except that of the cult. All right. They do this to the police officers. They actually move them. I interviewed a New Zealand police officer, and he was moved from his hometown, where his friends who weren't cops were and his family was, to other parts of the country. Now, when you move to other parts of the country and you're part of a big club like the cops, who become all your friends all of a sudden? All the cops. They become the only thing that you hang around with. That's how they get the cult members to be totally indoctrinated and utterly dependent on the cult itself, because they feel that they're part of it. Now, the effects on the personality and behaviors from victims of cult indoctrination, brainwashing, and narcissistic or psychopathic abuse are virtually identical to many of the traits shown by sufferers of complex post-traumatic stress disorder, a disorder that ironically exhibits many of the same behavioral characteristics as a narcissist. All right? You see how that cycle goes? Narcissists frequently raise their children in a way that their parents raised them, which means that their children typically wind up developing narcissistic personality disorder. That's the great cycle, right? That's how it runs society. That's why abusers are often the victims of abuse. Now, this gets into how you now understand how society sort of runs and why that great cycle has been kept on running throughout the entirety of human history, and it shows no signs of stopping as yet. So we've got pedophile cults, massive ones, all right? I think there was a...
Who's usually at the top of those?
I'm not sure on the specifics of those, but... Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at, say, some of the different groups of pedophile cults. Mm-hmm. So one pedophile cult is Child Protective Services, all right? Or in New Zealand, it's called Child, Youth and Family Services, or CIFS for short, named after a venereal disease. Now, on top of that, the way that they are able to get, let's just call the children meat, okay? This is how they think of them. They think of them as meat, as playthings, as something to be consumed.
Yeah.
So try to get yourself in that mindset for a minute. You see a beautiful child that has infinite potential, that has the capacity for love, creativity, and truly all the things that make humanity beautiful. Reduce that to your sexual plaything, and only that. And that is its only value to you. All right? You feel that real sick feeling in the pit of your stomach right away, don't you? All right? Everybody does.
Yes.
Everybody does, except malignant narcissists and psychopaths. Okay? Everybody feels sick to their stomach at the thought of that. And this is why most people don't want to hear about this subject, okay? Because they instantly feel sick to their stomach when they think that there are other people who are not like them who will treat children in a way that they never would, okay? It's a lack of imagination, essentially, all right? Vinny, I don't understand this. Why would somebody do that? Why would anybody... The reason you don't understand it is because you've got a conscience, okay?
Yeah, you're a decent person.
Oh, how can these people do that and sleep at night? Because they don't have a conscience to keep them up. Just taking a stab in the dark, you know? I mean, see, this is the problem that you're dealing with, is that if you don't understand your enemy, how are you ever going to fight them? But in order to understand your enemy, you need to go through a significant amount of trauma just by learning about it. Even if it didn't happen to you, even if it didn't happen to anybody you know, even if nobody you knew was involved, and you just interviewed people who only investigated it and never had anything done to them or anybody else in their family. That alone, that third, what's that? That's 1, 2, 3, 4 degrees of separation from the act itself, and the trauma still exists. Okay? That's how painful, that's how damaging, and that's how controlling the pedophile cults are. Now, that's only child, youth, and family services. So they've got a quota. Now, let's say you want 20,000 Polynesian children, you want 10,000 Asian children, and you want 30,000 white children, and you want 40,000 black children. All right, the black children are prized very highly. So are the white children. All right. Now, again, think of children as a commodity to be sold on the open market as sex slaves, more or less. Try to think of a human being not as something with a heart and a conscience and a soul worthy of respect, but think of it as a number, all right? Think of it as this coffee cup. Imagine you had as much emotional attachment to this coffee cup as you did to a child who you're raping, right? Mm-hmm. So they can do this. And they do. And the staff turnover rates are enormous in these institutions, because no good person with a conscience who goes in there with that public stated thing of, we're trying to help the children, and then they realize that they're not only not helping the children, they're actually killing them. They're actually selling them into human trafficking organizations and things like that. And so these people go like, okay, I'm out of here. And guess who remains? Only the scum. Only the psychopaths. And the reason why this can continue to go on is because of the secrecy. I watched a BBC documentary about a few boys, and it's really heart-wrenching to see men who are 40, 45 years old, who were abused when they were like 11, still haven't told their parents about it, right? Because of the shame. Right, because this is how the pedophiles work. They shame you into silence. Oh, you must have wanted it. You see? That kind of mind game, that sort of sickness. This is how they remain concealed. You need power, opportunity, and secrecy to operate any kind of pedophile cult for a long period of time. Now, if you're a government agency, certainly got the power. And due to non-disclosure agreements and all that legal stuff and everything, everybody's more or less sworn to secrecy, and they've got access to children 24 hours a day. They've got the opportunity. And thus, it becomes a pedophile cult pretty easily, right? And that's just the government ones. Then you get into the private pedophile groups, which are they're loosely affiliated with the other ones. So you'd have, let's say, the woman that I interviewed about it, whose husband was a pedophile, and his parents were the number one and number two Queen's Cross winning, public servant type up here, you know, elite of the public service, and they have a home called the Candy House, right? With soundproof glass and soundproof walls. You think about that? mm-hmm. freaking scary, right? Just the very, very yes. mention of the word. And this is why people, again, I need to reiterate this. This is why people don't want to watch those episodes, right? Because they don't want to know. And you can be forgiven for not wanting to know, but here's the frickin' point. If you don't know about it, how are you going to fight it? Okay? Sometimes, I think it was in Dante's Inferno, he said that sometimes when you travel into hell, hell comes back with you. Or when you look into hell, hell stares back at you. And this is the danger. Mm-hmm. One woman that I interviewed was investigating a pedophile cult called the Jesters. They were a particular Masonic lodge in the DC area who had strong donation ties to a children's burn unit. Okay? So the children who are away from their parents in a private thing getting free health care for some reason, who then get taken on these big cruises with a bunch of old men into, like, say, Bahamian waters and what have you. All right? Very, very nasty. Yeah. And she was so traumatized just by doing her investigations that she had to go see a counselor. Right? And this happens. That's why me personally, because I'm not willing to put my hands over my eyes or cover my ears and say, no, it's not happening. No, I don't believe it. No, I don't want to listen to it. Like the vast majority of people, because people are weak. All right. And people don't care. All right. And people are afraid.
Well, people are afraid of their own feelings, you know, and I would consider myself very sensitive, but when I heard about this stuff, I knew it in my heart, you know, it wasn't a mind thing. It was that I knew in my heart that these things happen and that it's not okay. And especially, and it didn't even come into question that my own feelings, my own sanity, you know, had to be spared, you know, and that's what we have on a massive, like, basis, you know, and that's why we have, you know, again, like, I bring up this Trump situation. There's a lot of people, like, really getting upset right now. And a lot of it, and like I said, it's not that he's not a douchebag or that he's, you know, filled his cabinet with, you know, basically like the supervillains from like Batman.
Well, with that, that goes on to an interview that I did with Douglas Dietrich. What was it? Pedophile rings pulling president's strings. All right. Now, this was a really, really tough interview to do because Douglas Dietrich is a military historian, and this is the third branch of pedophile cult. There's the government pedophile cult, private secret society pedophile cults, and the military pedophile cults. All right,
more military too.
Yeah. Now the military ones, and they go up in grades, of course. So the military ones, obviously the most powerful, obviously the most dangerous, obviously the ones with the most influence. Mm-hmm. So they're running. One example he gave me was that there was a base that had a childcare, a daycare center in it, with like 80 children on a base with only a couple of hundred people, right? Mm-hmm. That doesn't make any sense. There's no way that there'd be that many people working there with that many children that needed to be taken care of in the daycare center. Mm-hmm. Now, what really became apparent about the true nature of this daycare center was when the children were emerging from it with 16 venereal diseases. All right. So not only were they being raped by somebody with sexually transmitted infections, they were being raped by as many as 10, 20, 30, 40 of them. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
In some cases in one day, mm-hmm. This is the hardcore. Now, these people in the military have the world's most advanced surveillance technology. They have the most deadly hitmen. They have the most of everything. Okay, so naturally they're the ones who feel that they're above reproach. Naturally, they're the ones who would infiltrate most of the power centers of society and seek to control them in order to protect themselves. Now, we see this when a big scandal was released. I believe it was called the Franklin Scandal, and a documentary was made of this, and it said that all of the elites in the Chicago area were involved with this one pedophile cult. It was pulled from air. Okay. And a lot of times when you see these big leaks happening, they're just hushed up. And it's aided by the fact that people don't want to hear it anyway. So isn't that great? That
kinda you can like the abuse. Pizzagate thing.
Yeah. Pizzagate swept under the frickin' rug. Anybody talking flipped. About it now?
It flipped. It was flipped. And they're like saying, oh, this is fake news. And it's, you know, created to create for distraction purposes, which, yeah.
It serves a dual purpose. And and that's good because you can release the truth to people whilst at the same time telling them that it's not the truth and encouraging them to ignore it, all right? Yep. And when the bulk of the mainstream media do not cover it, and when the bulk of the alternative media, the big outlets, don't cover it either, it disappears, all right? And more or less a opportunity to save children from being raped on an industrial scale disappears with it because people don't want to freaking hear about it. All right. And this is the thing. People don't want to hear the truth. I know that's very difficult for people to say, oh, well, I want to hear the truth. No, you don't. No, you don't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
My business is the truth and I don't want to hear it. I know that I need to, so I force myself to listen to it. There's the difference. It's called having a moral obligation. Is this thing really painful to learn about? Yes. Is it true, though? Yes. I have to learn about it then. I don't really have a choice if I want to have a clear conscience and be able to get it to sleep at night. Because unfortunately, I haven't developed narcissism to the point of psychopathy where my creativity disappears. Where my conscience disappears, where my empathy disappears. I still have that, and I have it in spades. And so I think very, very similar to the way that these evil people do think. And that scares me because it means that I could potentially, if at some point, get compromised and start working for the enemy. Right? That is my greatest fear, that I will become the very enemy that I got into this fight to destroy. And it's only once I understood my enemy that I started to understand myself a bit more and start to put these little roadblocks in place. Roadblock number one, listen to your heart. Does this feel right? Does this feel right? No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. You shouldn't be doing it. Okay. And number two, surround yourself with honorable, decent people who can pull you up on stuff if you start going awry. Those are the only two roadblocks I've got, and thus far I haven't turned evil. Thus far.
Thus far. Yeah, and I really admire and appreciate that about you. I have no official allegiance to any source or anyone because of that that tendency for people to flip. I've seen, I've only been really following this. I call it my accelerated awakening for like about 4 or 5 years now. And I've seen just from the start of that, I've seen so many people of those people that I've followed flip. Or maybe they were that way the whole time and I just became aware of it. Right. But my allegiance is to humanity and to the freedom of all of humanity. And, as far as, I can't perceive myself, you know, in the future being flipped or, you know, having a gun, even if I had a gun to my head and they're saying, you know, you're not going to talk about this anymore. You're not going to do this or else we're going to do this. Like, I don't feel like that could happen to me. I think that's why I started doing this recently because I had to reach that point where I don't have the fear of, like, oh, there's nothing, there's almost nothing, pretty much nothing you can take from me that's going to compromise my values because I'm not trying to sound like a badass or anything, but I am prepared to die. Like, I'm living my life in a way now where I could die at any moment, and I am content with who I am and what I'm doing. And most people are nowhere near that or even thinking about going down that path. They want to be comfortable. They want to keep following and trusting the system that we were born into. And that's one of the other things of what I was trying to get at earlier by mentioning the recent election and people out there protesting, because I know you protest. But at the end of the day, it's like I wanted to get your feedback on, like, what would it really take, in your opinion, from what you've learned, to create the change? Like, you know, let's say we're aware of these child trafficking and sexual abuse rings. We're aware of, you know, the government, the system being a farce. But, you know, going out there and being like a free man, you know, movement person's going to only screw you,
yeah,
get you compromised, get you thrown in jail. So, like, what are some practical, have you spoken to anybody that has given practical steps to undoing the system? Or would it really take a massive, like an awakening, like information influx, and that hits everybody at once, and so everyone's on the same page?
It's the trauma process. Okay. So it goes denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. Right now, not everybody goes through the whole process. Some people skip things, and not everybody reaches acceptance either. All right. And for my money, I would bet that probably the vast majority of the population is stuck in stage one, the denial stage. No, there's no such thing as pedophile cults. No, there's no such thing as authority misusing their power. No, there's no such thing as a criminal banking cartel, so on and so forth. Right. So if you want to awaken, you need to accept that there are certain things that are outside of your control. Right. I remember I was interviewing a guy who became the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Doherty, right? And I interviewed him recently after interviewing him like years and years ago. And since interviewing him years and years ago, he got on the George Norrie show, got millions of hits on that interview, and got catapulted into it. And when I got him on the show again, he goes, "Well, Vinny, it was actually you that really inspired me largely to continue doing what I was doing." He said, You advised me of two words that really set me off on this direction. Can you remember what those two words were?" And I was just like, thought about it for like half a second. "Fuck it." And he's like, "That's exactly right." You know, and that's it. As soon as you've reached that level of desperation, as soon as you've got nothing left to lose, as soon as you're ready to say, "Fuck it, I'm ready to lose it all, I'm ready to risk it all," that's when you'll actually achieve acceptance. Okay.
But I see it as this beautiful everything, like, middle point, because it's not just a fuck it. It's like, I look at it at the same time, like, I feel like I'm more alive than ever before, but I also feel like I already died, like I'm dead at the same time, which feels really empowering. You know, it might sound weird to some people. That feels really empowering to me.
Well, for me, I mean, my reasoning process behind doing what I'm doing was out of trauma plus selfishness. Okay, like I do my show for purely selfish reasons. I don't want to get enslaved, and I don't want to get exterminated. Pretty straightforward, pretty selfish reasoning, because I came to the conclusion that unless all of us are free, none of us are free. I don't want to be a slave. Right. It means I have to try and free everybody, as many as I can, because I cannot free anybody by myself. All right? I can't do that without everybody else. I can't be free without everybody else. So I selfishly devoted myself to humanity. You understand how that works? We're all hypocrites, and it's those of us who embrace our own hypocrisy and the ability to live with that fact and keep doing the right thing anyway. Those are the ones that actually change the world. Those are the ones who actually mean something to the future of humanity. Everybody else, they live in denial. "Oh, no, I'm really, really happy in my life." Really, when was the last time you had an awakening conversation that actually made you feel alive while you were watching sport? It never happened, did it? No. When was the last time you actually felt as if your life was worth something when you got up before you'd had a good night's sleep to go to a job that you hate? It hasn't happened, has it? You see, when you get these things into perspective, you suddenly realize that not only are the vast majority of the things that you believe bullshit, but the vast majority of the things that you value are fucking worthless. All right? And the most valuable lessons you will ever learn in your life will generally be the ones that cost you the most, that you regret learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think the people that are more dangerous are the ones that think they're good people, you know, and just for example, just to give a really like lame example or on the lower end, but like people that have hybrid vehicles here and they're like, well, I'm saving the environment because I'm saving gas, you know, I have a hybrid vehicle. You know why I have a hybrid vehicle? Because it saves me money. That's why I have it. And I have no problem admitting that. I don't think I'm a good person because I drive that. Like the batteries cause more toxic waste in a landfill, you know? Like I still have to use fuel.
I want to interrupt this a little bit here because, all right, so A1, where does the lithium for those batteries come from? They tear up Canadian forest in order to get the sand ore out of it. They've literally cut down thousands upon thousands of square kilometers of forest in order to harvest that shit. Mm-hmm. And what are they doing now? Well, it turns out there's a hell of a lot of lithium in Afghanistan. So by buying a hybrid vehicle, you are supporting environmental destruction and global war. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's only the parts that's away from you. That's only the stuff you don't see. What you can see and what you can measure is the amount of electromagnetic radiation and electromagnetic frequencies that come off the converter, the catalytic converter, that produces a really, really resounding effect on your cells. So you're literally microwaving your cells while you're trying to save the environment, while you're destroying the environment, and while you're supporting the military-industrial complex. Stick that in your hybrid pipe and smoke it.
Right? You
know, and this is what I'm talking about, is that all of our beliefs, all right, anything that we believe, we don't actually know. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why we say, this is what I believe, because I've done no fucking research into it to find out the actual knowledge behind it. We're getting sold things, right? If Coke tells you that something is fat-free, what it tells me is that it's
chemical shitstorm.
Is that it's a carcinogen, right? Yeah. if say McDonald's tells me that they're offering salads, what that tells me is that they put so much dressing on that salad that it's got more fat than a Big Mac. All right.
Yep.
Everything's the opposite. We live an opposite world. And that's why the conspiracy theorists are called crazy as opposed to the government officials, right? People don't think government officials are crazy. They think that they're upstanding citizens and what have you. Whereas if you're a conspiracy theorist and you know what a cult looks like, you know that these people are cult members and that they have a cult of belief that is incredibly dangerous, causes untold harm to society, and they will keep causing harm to society until they are forced to stop. They won't stop by choice. They won't stop by enlightenment. They won't stop by anything else. There are only two things that psychopaths really understand as great things that they fear. Consequences. All right. First of all, consequences. If they have consequences for their actions, they'll stop acting in such a way and they'll try to act in a different way that will allow them to do something without consequences. That's why the secrecy, that's why the power relationships, that's why they get into high positions of society, because they can prevent themselves from having any consequences, right?
I would specify consequences as far as exposing what they are and what they're doing.
Oh, sorry, there's number two and three as well. All right, so
they fear
being exposed. That's another one. But the third one, which is the most interesting, is that they fear psychopaths, worse psychopaths than them. All right, because they know that this person follows as little rules as they do, that this person will make up any lie that they would and probably do an even worse one and probably do it, you know, you see what I'm saying? Now, this is the real difficult thing, because I was a big fan of the Riddick movies and things like that when they came out. And there's this great quote in the Chronicles of Riddick. In dark times, evil would normally be fought by good. But in times like these, it must be fought by another kind of evil. Now, I took that to heart to a large degree because I see a whole lot of the same personality characteristics in narcissists and psychopaths that I see and fear in myself. And thus, I feel like, let's say I've either put a projection up to say that I'm a bad person and therefore I need to pay comeuppance for the bad person that I am by doing a whole bunch of good things, okay, and to fight against evil because good people would get destroyed doing the same thing that I'm doing. And I can evidence that because there's not a single fucking person in this whole country of New Zealand who's doing anything like or anything close or anything even remotely similar to what I'm doing. Okay? Nobody. All right? Mm-hmm. Tell me.
But to be fair, there's only like less than 4 million people in your entire country.
4 million people. Right? And only one of them makes YouTube videos and radio shows regularly exposing the New World Order. Only one. Does that make me proud to be a New Zealander? No! That makes me feel freaking ashamed. And it pisses me off that I'm still, after 10 years pretty much, I'm still the only one. It's not that I'm the biggest. It's that I'm the only one. That's what really frustrates me. And I had to go overseas. I had to be offered an American talk show. I had to have an American producer in order to even achieve this level of stuff. That is how backward a little redneck country like New Zealand really is. People think we're worldly or what have you. No. No. Okay? Anybody who lives in America knows that alcohol and sports is the culture. And it dumbs people down and distracts them from everything important. You think you've got a problem with alcohol and sports? Come to New Zealand, buddy.
Yeah, I recall you. I was watching a recent interview when you were talking about, and I wasn't even aware of it, but you're saying like people think, you know, New Zealand's all pristine and clean, and he's like you were saying that you have just as many chemtrails, and you have that poison you were talking about being poured into the bush, into the the streams. Compound 1080, which I didn't know about. And I've had a handful of friends, my own family, go to New Zealand and they love it and they're like in love with it and they're like, oh, it's this pristine, you know, beautiful place. And it from the images I've seen, it is beautiful, but it's just as contaminated and screwed with as anywhere else.
But you have a look a look at any photos of the beautiful mountain ranges and wonderful prairies in the United States. Just as beautiful, if not more. All right? And people think that they have to come to New Zealand to see and grasp that kind of beauty. Why do you think they thought about shooting the Lord of the Rings in the United States, first of all, before Peter Jackson argued hardcore to get it shot here? You know? It's the thing. All of the world is beautiful, but we're convinced via tourism advertising mostly that the beauty's over there somewhere. All right? That it's not here and needs to be preserved, like the people at the Standing Rock are trying to do. Which Trump just okayed the pipeline deal for.
I noticed that now. So
Now, see, that's the frustrating thing. When you warn people, when you tell people, when you give them advice, you give them sound facts or whatever, not only do they ignore you, but they do the exact opposite of what you recommend that they do, and they make the situation worse. Now, I was interviewing somebody a while back, and I'm just getting around to editing the video now. I've got such a huge backlog, with Aidan Killian, who's an Irish comedian. And we're talking about this concept of when you're telling people the truth, how do you weaponize it to the point where you can actually wake them up, right? How could you say a phrase that is so well structured, so well backed up with its own logic that it could not be denied? And we both arrived at the inescapable conclusion, no such methodology exists.
I was going to say, I don't think that
exists. Exactly. Now, that means I fall back on an approach that I've been doing for a long time. It's called The Seventh Man. And Aidan Killian said something very similar to this on the show. He talked about if you've got a placard of truth, you hold it there. People go, nah. But you keep holding it. And you keep holding it. And you do not drop it because it's the truth. You keep holding that placard. And every single time when people walk by you denying it, their denial gets lessened ever so slightly. Okay? Now, I called it the seventh man phenomenon. So, first person comes up to you, you tell them something that's contrary to the current belief structure, they go, fuck off, you're a conspiracy theorist. Okay. A second person comes up to them, not you saying the same thing twice, but a second person comes up and says the exact same thing to them that's contrary to their belief structure. You're a conspiracy theorist, fuck off. Mm-hmm. But by the time the seventh person comes round to them, statistically speaking, that's when they have a chance for that belief structure to be overturned. Okay? Now, what that means on a very practical level is that if you are a truther, if you know the truth, and you see something happening in front of you, you see a mother at a cafe with an iPad next to her newborn baby's skull. And you say, hey, did you know that wireless electric radiation penetrates a baby's skull and can cause brain damage later in life? Fuck off, you're a conspiracy theorist. Okay. Maybe somebody else will say it. But you, the person who knows the truth, who sees the thing in front of you, have an obligation to say something. You only have to say something. You don't have to convince them. They don't have to like it. But you have to say something. You have to play your part. You might be the seventh man. Mm-hmm. Okay? You might be the first. Mm-hmm. But as long as you play your part and consider that a responsibility, you're doing well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tell people, you know, and a lot of like people like you, so you don't have to have a radio show. You don't have to have a YouTube channel. What I've been doing for the past several years before I started this, and this is like very fresh for me, is I've been having a lot of person-on-person conversations, which I think are way more powerful, honestly. And I've been attracting people ready to hear the truth or something contrary to what they've been programmed with. And I got into this initially, and I don't know if you remember me sharing with you, but because I started having like extra dimensional UFOs were waking me up in early in the morning, repeatedly, things like that. And it was messing with my head, you know, but it was in a roundabout way, getting me present with what's going on here and looking at it. And it all ties in together for me. I can go way out into left field, you know, with topics, and I can come right down into the nitty gritty practical things and still be lucid. And, I think people pick up on that. And so since I went through those five stages of grief, I totally did. I went through it all. But now that I've gone through it, I can talk to anyone about it, and I don't care. I preface a lot of my discussion, my sharing with, you don't have to believe a single word of what I'm saying, and I don't expect you to. But this is how I see it, and this is how I experience it. You know, and to me, this is going to continue. This bullshit is going to continue until we get with the program and we take our own power back and our own sovereignty as, like, you know, as creator beings. Yeah.
Well, I think it was, comedian Steve Hughes. He says, mm-hmm. If you got anybody who's trying to tell you to do something that you really don't want to do, that you know is wrong, just tell them these mm-hmm. three, just tell them these simple words. Fuck off. Mm-hmm. You cunt. Australian proverb. <laughs> You know, if you can be as blunt as possible, the problem with everybody is that we're so sensitive and we get worked up about everything that doesn't matter. And the problem is that because we get worked up about things that don't matter, we don't go to work doing anything that does.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you're talking about the example of the mother and the baby with the head by the iPad, and at least in this culture, the reason why they would tell you to fuck off or ignore you or whatever is not, I would assume from what I've seen is that it wouldn't be because they don't cognitively want to think about it. It's because they're so sensitive, like they're programmed to be reactive and defensive. So it's basically saying, oh, I'm a horrible mother. You're saying I'm a horrible mother? Like, fuck you. I'm a great mother.
I know,
like,
that's what it's called.
To keep this
when I was doing sales, because I'm a narcissist and basically a very fragile ego as a narcissist, anybody insults you, it cuts right through. There's no firewall. There's no defenses. It emotionally hurts very, very easily. And that's why doing this job takes a lot out of me, because I take a shockingly large amount of trolling and abuse on Facebook and YouTube. But when you...
I've seen it. I've witnessed it.
But when you stop having an emotional attachment to the outcome, that's when you actually reach that state of peace. Okay. I call it the information grenade approach. You pull the pin, you chuck it in, and hopefully it blows up in their face later. You just walk away out of the blast radius before they've got even really a chance to react. Give them a little factoid. And if it takes root, that's good. Yeah. If not, not your fault, not your problem.
Could I bother you for like just, you know, one like final thought? What if you could impart anything to anyone from this that's been watching this discussion?
If you want to be perfectionist, you're never going to get anything finished. Do something to the best of your ability right then. Don't agonize over it. Release it and then go on to the next thing. Okay? Release. Go on to the next thing. Record. Edit, release, go on to the next thing. There's a real big problem that I have with people who find infinite excuses to not get started doing what they want to do and being who they want to be. And it usually stems from them worried about being judged by other people. Oh, but everybody won't think this video is good enough or blah, blah, blah. It's like, dude, have you fucking watched a YouTube lately? Do you have any idea the low quality production value that is out there with people who are just like speaking with them without even a proper background, with tinny vocals? They don't even have their curtains drawn. They don't even have lighting. They don't have a green screen. They don't even have an HD webcam. And they've got 100,000 subscribers. Yeah. Why? Because they release a video every day, say something that's honest and real, and release it and then do something else. All right? Don't be concerned with what other people are doing, with what other people are feeling, or whatever. Be selfish, do what you feel is right, and don't accept anything else.
Beautiful.
Cheers, bro. Thank you very much. And I'm going to make sure that people go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because that's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead. Make my news.
Right. And if they want to donate.
Same web page there. We've got a little Patreon account. So if you want to put up $1 a month. One of my Patreon users actually upped their donation from $5 a month to $10 a month this morning. I was like, that's really sweet of you, bro. Thank you. And I also want to give a shout out to all my listeners and supporters and donors and things like that, because 2016 was just such a freaking rough year for me, bro. Like, Kat got sick, had to have surgery. My wife got sick, had to have surgery. And I was like supporting this whole income of this whole household basically on me, an activist, you know. it was so incredibly stressful, that I had to I had to take off time from September. So from September 2016 through to maybe mid-January 2017, I wasn't doing my radio show because I was just had too much of this stress in my life. And I really want to thank all the people that kept donating regularly anyway, because they knew that I was going through a rough time and just needed their support to continue so that I could then come back and be firing at all cylinders again, and I am. Well, thanks, man, for inviting me on and having this little conversation here, bro. It's been good.